This is In Focus on News Radio 1350 KMAN.
And Kathy Dawes, along with Jones Professor of Production Medicine and Professor at Kansas State University College of Veterinary Medicine, Daniel Thompson. It's been a while since you've been on, and always enjoy Daniel coming on and traveling quite a bit these days and working a lot with some of our major retail restaurant establishments. 537-1350, if you have questions or comments, toll free, 866-776-1350, or you can tweet us at 1350KMAN. And I know last time you were in, it's been several months, but you were really starting to get into working with some of the different restaurant chains, such as McDonald's, and now you tell me you're involved with Yum. And kind of tell us what you're doing these days, Dan.
Yeah, well, thanks, Kathy. Actually, it's been about a year, I think.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, and so, you know, it's been a lot of fun, a lot of, you know, I do a lot of work with our Kansas beef producers, do a lot of work with cow-calf stocker and feedlot across the state, major packers, and now a natural evolution is going one step further down the beef retail chain to working with some of the groups like McDonald's and Yum Brand. And a lot of people hear Yum, and they need to know that's Kentucky Fried Chicken, Pizza Hut, and Taco Bell. And obviously, with my background, I don't do a lot with the Kentucky Fried Chicken part, except maybe sample. And then I do a fair bit of work for the Taco Bell group.
But when we talk, I mean, some of the misconceptions, and I know it can make or break the beef industry. I mean, it's important to have these restaurants maybe understanding what is going on. And I know you said you just got back from San Antonio. And yep. You know, tell us more about specifically what you do when you work with these groups.
You bet. Well, the big thing is that these groups are major procurement centers for the beef industry, and so they're buying a lot of beef products, and they're wanting to make sure that they have the highest quality, the safest food. They want to make sure that animals are being raised humanely, and being the large groups that they are, buying groups that they are, they're under a lot of pressure from animal activists, and whether it's environmental activists or animal rights activists, antibiotics activists, and so they're dealing with the pressures on a day-to-day basis, where these activists are trying to masquerade as a consumer group rather than an activist group. And the goal of the activist groups then is to go in and try to change or help those groups make a change in what we have to do in production in the beef industry. And when they don't understand is that the activist groups, they're driven by what we call the three R's: refine, reduce, and replace animal protein out of your diet. They have an overarching goal of a vegan or an animal, a vegetarian agenda. And the way that they refine animal protein production is by trying to get a big company to say, we'll no longer allow antibiotics in our supply chain, or we'll no longer allow steroid implants in our supply chain. Something to that nature, which would then increase the cost of production, which then, if it increases the cost of production, would increase the price of food for you and me, whether it's at McDonald's or whether it's at Yum or whether it's at a grocery store, which then has a natural reduction in the consumption of animal protein. And so they really are quite smart, but these retail groups, our beef industry groups, are spending time now more than ever to really understand beef production as a whole. And that's what my job is. My job is to go in, work with the executives at McDonald's. Actually, the building we go to is called Hamburger University in Chicago. And then work with Yum Brand Food and Taco Bell, who's out of Irvine, California, and really sit down and say, hey, this is the truth about what's going on out here in Kansas. This is the truth about what's going on in feedlots in eastern Colorado. And understanding the science and the safety and the wholesomeness, and more importantly, the care of each and every other rancher that's spending time taking care of the animals that take care of us.
It's interesting you mentioned California, because I had a friend who used to live in Los Angeles, and she said there's no doubt that the animal rights groups, even back when she worked there, were very active. And have you seen a change just even in the last year, Dan?
Yeah, I think the big thing about the animal rights activists is that they went from the big public displays and protests to being more with lawyers and marketing and trying to work through legislature, but the legislature works too slowly for them, and it's too costly. And now with some of the laws against not-for-profit groups, they can't attack and lobby the way they used to due to tax break purposes. So now they're really shifting their eyes towards putting pressure on retailers. And one thing we have to remember about restaurant groups is restaurants don't make money feeding the poor. Restaurants make money on feeding people who can afford to have them plan the meal, cook the meal, and do the dishes. And our SNAP coupons or food stamps do not work, you know, at restaurants. And so when we start to think about some of these changes that maybe restaurants might make, and I don't think a lot of them understood that when they make a SNAP decision on trying to say something, market something is hormone-free or antibiotic-free or grass-fed or something of that has no impact on the wholesomeness, the safety, or the nutrition content of the food, that they really are driving up the food prices for people that are close to the poverty line. And so when they started understanding that, you'll start seeing a slowing of these types of marketing campaigns. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I don't care if people want to eat natural and organic food, but there's two groups in America that don't care about science when it comes to food, the rich and the poor. The rich just err to the side of safety because they can afford to, and the poor just want to eat. And when we see these types of SNAP decisions, and like I said, I don't care if people want to eat organic and natural food, but the problem I have is when someone tells me that beef that's raised conventionally, which is what I put on the table for my daughters and wife because we can't afford the natural and organic beef products, when they tell me that it's not as safe, not as wholesome, or not as nutritious, that's when I have a problem because that's just false.
You know, some of the other chains I know I have been seeing the descriptions you were mentioning, the non-GMO meat or whatever, they kind of, so that is interesting that you mentioned that. And I don't know, is it just a fad, do you think, or is it something that's good? I mean, I'm thinking the organic probably is here to stay. I don't know.
It's such a small market. It's here to stay, but the again, it's for the elite. It's not for something that people that are on a middle income or a low income that 95% of Americans are on are going to be able to afford or be able to continue. I liken it to the fact of, you know, that's kind of like someone that says we're going to eat natural and organic and then they go out and jump in a Prius. You know, it's they're going backwards on the technology and the natural resources and some of the care factors in animal health. We can't sacrifice animal health and human health because of a fad or because of now antibiotic resistance. Absolutely, that's something that happens in this world. But we're learning that even when we raise the content of copper in a diet or increase the mineral zinc, we can increase antibiotic resistance. So, you know, what I've heard an old boy down in Texas tell me one time, he said, you know, for every complex problem, there's a simple answer, and it's wrong. And so we have to continually work here at K-State and the land-grant mission, continually go out and work with our producers, support our producers, support our veterinarians. They do such an unbelievable job on a day-to-day basis of caring for the animals, using antibiotics judiciously, and making it affordable for all Americans to eat. Hard for me to go to a single mom with two kids and say we're making this change just for a marketing ad for a restaurant.
You know, I do want to remind our listeners we have just a few more minutes here with Daniel Thompson, of course, Jones Professor of Production Medicine at K-State, 537-1350. But do you feel like you're making progress? And I know here again we could even look at social media. I mean, there's a lot out there. I mean, we heard so much about fake news during the election, but you probably experience a little bit of that too when it comes to some of your social media sites.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that's really hard for us in agriculture is we're a humble, hardworking, kind of keep to your own business type of group. And we've kind of had to change that to stay ahead of some of this. We have to get our message out and educate. And I think it really comes back to the fact that only 2% of Americans farm and ranch or are directly involved with farming and ranching. So 2% feed 100%. And so many people are 2, 3, 4 generations removed from the farm that they really don't have any idea of where their food comes from or how it's produced. And so when they see that news blip or the fake news or the spin or the headline, that's all they're getting. And so we have to be vigilant, and there's a difference between advocating for agriculture and educating people about agriculture, and we have to do a little bit of both.
Now, when you work with these high-level restaurants, quite honestly, I mean, just some of the different misconceptions that you hear the most about, and are they pretty receptive to what you have to say?
They're great. I tell you what, they're no different than anybody else. They want to provide a quality product. They want to make a living for a lot of people that work for them. You know, when you start to think about McDonald's and the size, I didn't really realize they were saying that there's more McDonald's restaurants in Chicago than there are Chick-fil-A restaurants in the United States. And so when you start thinking about serving 64 million people a day, It's pretty overwhelming.
That's why those cows are out there on the ads for Chick-fil-A. I have to say that's a very creative marketing campaign. I do have to admit it's cute.
Yeah. No, it's you know, the groups are very receptive. They want to do what's right, and they want to keep their restaurants viable and keep they want the highest quality products, and they want their animals taken care of, and they're looking for ways to work with the producers. They're looking for ways to work with the packers so that we have this one beef concept. And I'm starting now. They say the greatest distance between two people is the last 3 feet, and that retailer is the last 3 feet between the beef industry and the consumer. And so working together and understanding each other's business is just so important, and that's what my job is.
I bet it's been an interesting year, it sounds like.
It's been a lot of fun.
Any other highlights you're wanting to leave with us today? We could talk all day, I feel like, but, you know, just anything else you kind of want to emphasize?
Well, we have a lot of good faculty at K-State that are doing a lot of great things for the beef industry, and it's just been a lot of fun supporting the area. We got out the new VFD is in effect, the Veterinary Feed Directive, and while we're having some growing pains, it's something that is just another step in assuring judicious antibiotic usage in the beef industry, and something that we're taking a lot of pride in.
Kind of explain again what that is, and that has to do with antibiotics, as you just mentioned, I think. But
yep, the Veterinary Feed Directive is in the past, producers did not have to have a prescription for antibiotics that were fed to cattle in the feed. That you go get a bag of chlorotetracycline from the Orslins or the feed store, and so now FDA has made a ruling. And they announced it in 2013, so we've had a little bit of time to prepare for this, 4 years, that starting January 1 of 2017, farmers and ranchers will now need a prescription from a veterinarian to have antibiotics in the feed. So now injectable antibiotics and feed-grade antibiotics all require a prescription for the use in any animal, just like you or I going to the doctor to get an antibiotic. Only they will get one from a veterinarian.
I know we've had Riley County Extension Agriculture Agent Greg McClure in, and I think he's mentioned this several times, is a farmer really isn't going to use it unless he really feels that he needs to for the health of that particular animal. But I guess sometimes people don't realize. I mean, there is a reason for being careful about using antibiotics, but when you have sickness going around, you need something to fight it, I would guess.
Yep, and it doesn't do anything to preclude us from using these antibiotics. This ruling doesn't do anything to jeopardize animal health or human health. All it's saying is now the veterinarian should be included in a decision when you're going to use an antibiotic in the feed. And I think it's a good positive step forward for the beef industry. I think it's a good positive step forward for animal and human health and kind of the public health or the One Health type thought process. And I do think it's going to increase the veterinary oversight on farms and ranches, and hopefully there will be a lot more gain from having an extra set of eyes on your farm or ranch than not.
Well, sure appreciate you stopping by. Don't be a stranger. Let's not wait another year to have you back on.
Well, I agree, and thank you so much for what K-Man does for this area. I listen to K-Man. Very appreciative of what you all do for so many people in this Manhattan area.
Well, thanks so much. Daniel Thompson with us today, and Jones Professor of Production Medicine with Kansas State University College of Veterinary Medicine. We'll take a break. Institute for Commercialization President Kent Glasscock joining us next. You're listening to In Focus.
KMAN Morning Show is brought to you by M&S Plumbing, Heating, and Air.